Blog Talk Radio.
You are about to enter into the world of the paranormal with your hosts, Sherry Peng and Jason O'Fear. Explore with us the world of ghosts, UFOs, demons, and Bigfoot. You can also call into the show at 215-383-3999 and join the discussion.
It's amazing how fast the week has gone, and we are back for another episode of Paranormal Horizons. I'm Jason O'Fear, here always with the beautiful Sherry Peng. Sherry?
Hey, Jason. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Just getting myself psychologically ready for another Monday at work.
Wow. Did you enjoy your weekend, or was it laid back, or how was your weekend?
It was generally laid back. I've been sleeping lately, and actually last night I was able to catch up on a little bit of sleep, so I'm very grateful for that because I was getting really tired.
Wow. Well, I'm glad, and hopefully things are going to look better, and I'm really concerned about your health, and we'll be praying for you.
I appreciate it. I'm still kicking, so... The show must go on. So
yes.
Now we had talked a little bit about the guest you got us this evening. Why don't you give a little intro before we bring him on the show? I know we're going to be talking about a subject matter that is kind of scary, and I know it kind of scares me to talk about it, but it's part of the paranormal, so we need to always touch every subject. So what have you got us lined up for tonight?
Well, for the first time this evening, we're going to have, and Brian can correct me when he comes on air. I'm not sure how you pronounce his last name, but his name is Brian Owlett. He's a bishop, and he's very well sought after in the media and just for interviews and his wealth and knowledge. I talked to him a couple times personally. And this guy is just amazing, wealth of knowledge. I've learned so much. And tonight he's going to talk about exorcisms, ghost hunting, primordial spirits, paranormal investigations. So we're just going to open the board up and see what people can learn and share. So anyway, we're going to bring Brian on the air.
Awesome. We'll bring... Hey,
hello.
Brian, how's it going?
I'm doing well. How about you? Thank you for having me.
I've been great. Excited to go to talk about these subjects. I know I'm always a little leery when we talk about them because it's hard to know that I don't know everything, and there are certainly things out in the universe I don't understand. And just because I don't necessarily believe in something doesn't make it not exist. Who knows? But good to get you on, and why don't you, Sherry gave you a little intro there, which I'm sure you heard. Why don't you tell everybody a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Well, sure. I'm an exorcist bishop with the Order of Exorcists, Sacred Order of St. Michael the Archangel, that operates all over the world. Mostly in the United States, but we have groups all over the world, and we've been in existence since 1980 as a order. It started out pretty small and just in California under Archbishop Ron File, and then have just been growing ever since. And so I operate the Atlanta division for the Order of Exorcists as an exorcist bishop under my own jurisdiction out here. And I also operate as the presiding bishop of the Holy Nicolaitan Catholic Church. So I've more or less combined the exorcism ministry into the primary outreach of the Holy Nicolaitan Catholic Church. And so what we generally do is within about a 2.5 hour driving radius around the city of Atlanta, we will cover cases based upon what we receive through intake forms on our website, people that are reporting paranormal events within their property, within their homes, within their lives. And so we go in, we conduct a thorough and complete investigation and determine the causation of the event and resolve it. And we continue to work with the client until the situation is fully resolved, or at least until the client can tell us that they are no longer being disturbed by whatever the problem was that they initially came to us for.
So, Brian, I remember we were talking about this earlier this week. You said that most of the cases that you are being called upon are usually, they're not demonic cases, correct?
That is correct. Demonic possession or any of the types of demonic attack, and we can go through those a little bit later if you want. But there's different divisions of demonic attack, and those are actually quite rare relative to actual paranormal events that are more related to spirit activity or what would be considered classic haunting. That's far more prevalent, but most people do not are not able to determine the difference because, for all intents and purposes, they are very similar in manifestation. So it's really important that they get our help so that we can identify exactly what's going on and then take the appropriate course of action to resolving it. Because as you can imagine, the resolution of a demonic event is entirely different than assisting with quieting down a haunted house.
We've talked to Archbishop Pfau a lot of times, and he really has some amazing stories. Now, like I said earlier, I've always been a little bit skeptical with it, but it doesn't necessarily mean it doesn't exist. Quite a few paranormal investigations, and I haven't ever run into anything that I would consider dark. And but I'm curious about what your experiences have been, because there's always going to be the naysayer out there that says, well, these things don't exist.
Well, what about attachments, too? That's what I would like to find out a little bit more.
What sort of evidence have you run across that, you know, like, have you seen, like, objects moving on their own? Stuff like that?
That's sort of a rare thing to be able to catch it. But, you know, it has happened. I have encountered it. I would say I have encountered it in less than 5% of investigations, but I mean, it does happen. Yes. What we see mostly as far as hard evidence is apparitions, being able to record on video using either a full spectrum camera or an infrared camera, an actual manifestation or a partial manifestation of an apparition of a spirit of some kind. And we've been able to collect that on a few occasions that are irrefutably what you're looking at. I've got an interesting story that I can tell you about if you want as an example to this, and people can even go to my channel on YouTube and watch the video that I'm referring to. We catch things of that nature more than we would see things moving around. It takes a great deal of energy in order to affect the physical world like that. So unless you're dealing with an extremely powerful demonic force, or unless you're dealing with an extremely haunted location, you're typically not going to see things moving around by themselves. That's just not going to be a very common thing.
I know I did a paranormal investigation, and I did capture. I couldn't explain. It came out of the floor and a camera, and it wasn't like web or anything. It was the weirdest thing, and I tried my best to try it and debunk it, but I couldn't come up with an explanation. But yeah, I'd be interested to hear your story that you were talking about.
Yeah, sure. You know, what we were on an investigation. A client several months back was reporting being pushed down the stairs. That's the point when they contacted us, because they had all sorts of typical haunting type phenomena happening in their house, hearing voices, seeing people standing at the edge of their bed in the middle of the night, you know, waking up, turning on the lights, and then they're gone. Very, very typical classic types of paranormal activity that you hear in countless places. Anybody that studies the field is familiar with these kind of stories. But they contacted us when the when the gentleman's wife said she was pushed down the stairs and into the basement, and that's when they felt that it was more personal, that they might have been being attacked, and it disturbed them enough to seek out the help of the church to, you know, maybe, you know, quiet this down for them, because they did not enjoy it. Some people get excited when they encounter something paranormal. I guess it sort of opens up their horizons to something that, you know, changes their paradigm a bit. You know, a lot of people don't like it. And typically when people contact us, it's not for fun. It's typically because they are disturbed. And so this was one of those types of cases. And then we went in and brought our equipment. At the time, I didn't even have a full spectrum camera with me. I just was using an infrared. And I sent half my team upstairs to do an EVP session in the bedroom where they were seeing apparitions in the middle of the night. And I took another team member and myself went down into the basement where the cat would go down there and stare at the window. They had several windows in the basement, but there was this one particular window where the cat in the house would go down there and just yowl and pace up and down the stairs, and then kept going back to the window, but there's nothing there. And so they thought that was very strange. Now, I should preface this by saying, before we start an investigation, after we conduct an interview with the client, we'll walk the property and just have them sort of take us on a tour of their home, so that they can tell us, you know, where things have been happening and where they're having disturbances and just get a better idea as to where the activity is, so that we can set up our equipment in those hot spots. And we're outside during this part of time, and we're right in front of the basement window where the cat likes to yowl from the inside. And he said, you know, I don't know if this is worth mentioning, but you know, maybe you can tell me if this is something that is paranormal. But he says, about a week before I called you, which was actually just about 2 weeks, I think, before we actually investigated. He said a bird had flown into this basement window, and it just was a complete splat. It was like, you know, an insect hitting your car windshield. It hit the window, and its innards went all over the place, and you could still see the innards of the bird. He hadn't cleaned up that, but he cleaned up the bird. And he says, do you think that this is something paranormal? And I said, it can be. But I said, birds do this, though. I mean, you know, they don't really see the same way that we do. And while their vision is better in certain ways, they're not too good with glass. And so they tend to think sometimes that they can fly through a window, and then they end up really damaging themselves, because, you know, birds have hollow bones, and it doesn't take much to injure them. And so I said, it's hard to say. I said, it could be just a coincidence, but I said I wouldn't rule out the possibility that it can sometimes be a sign of paranormal activity around the location, because it can affect their senses, and sometimes animal behavior can get very strange when they are in an environment that has high EMFs or other things that can cause issue. So we wanted to set up in front of that window. So we went downstairs. We set up the infrared camera. We're in complete darkness. I was using a laser grid, which is a little piece of equipment. It looks like a size of a ballpoint pen, and it shoots a laser out in multiple directions, in hundreds of directions, so that you can, if there is something walking in front between the laser and the camera, it's easier to see. Sometimes apparitions, if they're very low level apparitions, you can't even see them. But the laser lets you see the an object moving, and it can, depending upon how many points of light are blocked out, you can sort of get a shape and kind of identify what you might be looking at. So we've got the laser grid set up, pitch dark. In the basement, just myself and my other team member, and we're I'm looking through the camera screen, and she's just walking completely blind in the basement in front of this window where the cat goes, and so I have her start calling out to see if we can make contact with anything that's there, and no more than I would say a minute and a half, I notice on the infrared camera, because that's, I'm looking right at it in real time and recording everything, I'm noticing that there's an apparition that follows my other team member as she walks in front of the camera. So she starts walking in front of the camera. She's talking, trying to make contact, and all of a sudden this partial apparition follows her. Mm. And I mean, it was very obvious. I mean, sometimes you don't even catch these things when you're on site. You tend to sometimes only see them after you get home and really can sit down and analyze the footage that you've captured. But this I saw live, and fortunately the camera was rolling, so I caught it. And so I said, you know, but this is a little camera. It's a little screen, and I couldn't really see it very well. But I just saw that there was something that followed her, and so we marked that as something that we needed to go back and analyze. And so one of the advantages of being an independent autocephalous bishop, which means that I'm not under the canons of Rome, is that I can be married, I can have a family. And so I have a wife, I have a son. And my son likes to sometimes watch our footage that we can capture. And so he's got a better eye for these things than I do. And so sometimes I you know, if there's a long amount of footage in a particular room, he'll just sit there and watch and tell me if he sees anything. And so he was doing that with this particular basement window footage that we caught, and he starts running, and he goes, Daddy, I there's a bird. And I said, what are you talking about? He says, there's a bird on the film. And I said, well, show me what you're talking about, because I had no idea what he was talking about. And we roll it back to that point where you can hear me very clearly on the camera saying, oh, Elizabeth, something just followed you. Elizabeth was the team member with me at the time. And so sure enough, now I'm looking at it in high resolution on a big screen television at home. It was not a partial apparition as I thought, because I was looking at the little screen. It was a bird flying, and in the position of what a bird would look like as soon as it's ready to hit the window. So
wow.
We caught the essence, the last residual moment of that bird dying. Now, is that a spirit of the bird? Not really. It is sort of, but not what you think, because people think that spirits are like these sentient, invisible, you know, creatures that were once living and have now died. That's not really an accurate description of what spirits or ghosts are. But yes, humans can have the manifestation of a ghost after death, and animals can too, because what a ghost essentially is the residual shadow of the life force at the moment of death in most cases. And that's when you get the difference between a residual haunting and a sentient haunting. Sentient hauntings are a completely different animal. But most hauntings are residual. And what it is it's just an impression that's left there in the ether. And it will replay itself over and over and over again. You can catch it. And that's what that was. We caught the bird flying into the window, and we caught the spiritual essence of the bird right after it had died. And you can go to my YouTube channel and see that if your audience is interested. Just look me up, Eye of the Seer, all one word. I Am the Seer on YouTube, and you can find some of our footage that we've captured. And that particular location was very active.
Now, is that I Am the Seer, all separate words? I'm trying to look at that right now.
It's all one word. So just put in I of the Seer, one word, and you should be able to come up with it.
Well, it's interesting you caught the bird. I've seen that behavior. I there was a cabin one time, and this robin kept slamming into the window till the window was bloody. It was the weirdest thing. It was kind of freaky.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. I mean, it's well known to people that, you know, have been investigating for a long time. There's also an EVP. If you go to that channel, you'll see the video is called Bird Apparition in Infrared. And then there's another one that says EVP is not that I can see. That one, those are both caught at the same location.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. I'm just really, really curious.
So what we talked about it earlier too. What are primordial entities? What can you explain that? What are they?
Well, that's an important distinction that we make. I don't think you're going to find too many people in the paranormal field making these kind of distinctions. I think part of the problem with the paranormal field, and I don't want to knock anyone, but you know, one of the problems that I have noticed is that too many people are getting into it for entertainment, and not enough are getting into it to actually help people. And you know, one of the things that I stress with my team, and you know, fortunately, I've got an extremely good team who really understands that this is a ministry. This is not this is not just for our own enjoyment, or this is not for research. We don't collect this information because we're interested in proving spirits or ghosts or life after death. And that's not our motivation here. Everybody on our team already knows these things exist. We don't need to prove it to ourselves, and we have no interest in proving it to the rest of the world. But what is important is that there are people who are in spiritual crisis because of these things, and they don't have help. They don't know where to go. They even go to their pastors, and they don't know what to do. And they find us from all, you know, the people from all walks of life. I even get calls. I'm not kidding. The church office gets calls on a fairly regular basis from places like Saudi Arabia, Iran, from Muslims begging for help with getting rid of the jinn, you know, because they don't know what to do to fix this. And I guess because of, you know, the popularity in movies to always feature a Catholic priest as the archetypal exorcist, you know, people tend to think, oh, well, go to the Catholic Church. They seem to know what they're doing.
Are they demons? Is that what jinns are?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's basically the Muslim term for a jinn. They kind of see it as a demon, although it is a little bit different. It's closer to what we would call a primordial, and that's why I kind of bring that up, because it sort of segues into answering your question there. You know, I like to say, four classifications of demons. And the one, of course, that everyone is familiar with is the fallen angel. That's your biblical classification. That's your satanic demon. This is a demonic entity that is extremely powerful, extremely intelligent, extremely sentient. And this is what will wreak havoc on your life and could lead to demonic possession in some cases. That's typically what, you know, when people are talking about demons, that's what they have in mind. But there's other kinds, and demon is sort of a misnomer for the other forms, because they're not really demons if you're talking about evil entities that are out to destroy you. Because only satanic demons would fall into that category, where they are so hateful of the creation that they will do whatever they can to destroy human lives any opportunity that they have. So that's your satanic demon. That's class one. The second class is what we call primordial. And that's where you're dealing with spiritual energy that is more ancient than creation itself. These are spiritual forces that pre-existed the formation of the physical universe. And they are largely neutral in manifestation. They're not evil. They're not good. They just are what they are. And they behave very much. The best analogy that I can give you is like a mosquito. A mosquito is a nuisance. You go out into the woods, if you don't have DEET on to kind of repel them, you're going to get eaten alive. If you're like me in particular, I mean, mosquitoes just love me. And so I get swarmed and I come out, you know, itching like crazy. They're not meaning to do me harm. The mosquitoes are not evil. There's no intention there to be malicious. It's just in their nature to seek you out and drink your blood, because that's how they survive. Well, there are spiritual forces that do this to us in a non-corporeal way, and they latch on to us and they suck our energy, and that can cause in our human lives, in the ordinary realm of perception, sickness and disease and mental illness and anxiety, depression, and a low just a low energy level that can cause all sorts of additional problems, socioeconomic problems, you name it. I mean, it can just destroy a person's life, and so they immediately think that they've got a demon attacking them, and so these things we sort of classify in a demonic sense because it is negative to the person, but they are not intentionally evil, and they are not intelligent like a fallen angel would be. This is something that is just little more than the intelligence of a mosquito. And so we call those primordial or elemental. Now, there are, and this is where it gets complicated, there are elementals that are primordial spirits that do have a rudimentary intellect. And that's a sort of a different thing, but they largely stay away from human beings. And so you usually will not encounter them unless you're intentionally interfering with their environment. I've been fortunate enough to catch some of those on camera by accident. But that's something that you don't really come across too often, but it can happen. I mean, we do encounter it on rare occasion. The third type of demon is what I call a created demon. And this is there's two forms of this. So this is what this would be like class 3 and class 4. Created demons come in two styles. The first would be what we would call as a wrathful or vengeful spirit. Now, this is not a demon at all in the traditional sense. What this is a person who died usually very tragically, or died in a state of anger or within some sense of negativity, and that's the last thing they take with them. So think about it this way. A lot of people think that when you die, you carry on your cognitive faculties that you enjoyed in life. Well, guess what? Your brain is part of your body, and it dies with the rest of your body. So when your body dies, and it begins to decompose, your brain is decomposing with it, which means all your rationality, all your faculties of intellect and cognition go with it. And so all that's left in the spiritual non-corporeal sense is instinct. It's a rudimentary awareness, but it's not consciousness as you and I understand it. It's just rudimentary awareness. It's instinctual awareness. And so whatever your last thought or feeling was at the moment of death can be projected out into the non-corporeal side of the universe, or what we call the spiritual world, and that will manifest and feed on negative energy. And so it can become a demon. It can eventually become so hateful towards the environment around it because it died in a state of hate that it will latch on to the people around that location, and for all intents and purposes, can behave just like the satanic style of demon. But it's not a fallen angel. It's a different category. And then the fourth type of demon, which is the second type of created, is a thought form. And anybody who has studied the occult or the Western mystery tradition and has dealt with ceremonial magic knows that you can conjure thought forms. You can produce thought forms with your mind, and they can manifest in the spiritual, in a spiritual sense, and carry out your intentions. And so this type of demonic entity is usually seen in cases of witchcraft, where an evil person or a person who practices a dark form of witchcraft, and I want to make that distinction. Most witches are not evil. I know a lot of witches, and they're wonderful people. But there are those that practice dark magic, and this is magic with the K. This is not stage magic. You know, this is a cult activity, and they will conjure thought forms and send them out to attack their enemies. And that it would be the fourth type of demonic entity that we would encounter. And those are really it. But the only the satanic is a true demon. The others are just the misrepresentations of other things.
That's amazing.
I can't believe there are people out there that would want to summon evil in this world, but I guess there must be. You see it on the TV and the movies and the news sometimes, going to abandoned buildings and they find satanic. And to me, that's just like playing with fire. Why would you even want to mess with something like that?
Well, I mean, it would seem that there's enough evil in the world already that we don't need to actually bring more in. But I guess you could say that that just demonstrates the human depravity. You know, we are a relatively depraved species, and we are sort of programmed ourselves towards the negative. And, you know, revenge is a stronger emotion than compassion. Compassion is a higher emotion, and compassion is more powerful in result. But when you're feeling it in the heat of the moment, if you had to weigh the intensity of emotion that you get from compassion and the intensity of emotion you get from revenge, revenge is going to win every time. In fact, every negative emotion is going to win. Think about it. Think about the greatest love you've ever experienced is usually not as great as the greatest hate is bad. Negative emotions are stronger. They are less controllable. And the human mind has a more difficult time integrating them. And so I think sometimes people in their poor judgment will look to the occult to try to solve their problems in a way that makes them feel powerful. And so if you can successfully conjure a demonic entity of some kind and use it in a way to harm an enemy, then, you know, that gives the person a very strong but false sense of power.
And that's what it's all about, is the ego and power. Everybody wants to feel power.
Yeah,
The world's a mess. And you see all these movies coming out, you know, the Ouija and all this. It just tempts people to people want excitement. So, you know, why not experiment? And I see all these horror stories about, you know, people stories about their experiences with boards and the occult. And I'm like, no, I don't even want to touch that. Now, when I was younger, I messed with a Ouija board. But, you know, now that I'm older, I just don't even want to take a chance with the occult, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, and I want to make a distinction there with Ouija boards. You know, Ouija boards, while they are, they can be a opportunity for negative or dark entities to interact with you. The danger is really not the Ouija board itself, but the lack of skill of the lack of spiritual skill of the user. And so, you know, a person who is very skilled in dealing with the spiritual energies can use a Ouija board perfectly safely. And I would like to liken this to driving a car. In fact, Sherry and I had this conversation last week. It's like, you know, if you're, you know, most people when they pick up a Ouija board are the equivalent of a two-year-old trying to drive a car. If you give your two-year-old the keys to your automobile and say, hey, you know what, you've earned it. You go, you drive us now. We're tired of driving you around. And that's not going to end well. I don't think there's anybody in their right mind that would agree that that's a good idea. Someone's going to get hurt. The car's going to crash. It's not going to work because they don't have the skill and they don't have the capacity to understand the operations of the vehicle in order to use that very powerful device skillfully and safely. And a Ouija board, as far as the spiritual world is concerned, is like an automobile. And there aren't licenses that you can go and get to learn how to use a Ouija board correctly. It's really more or less the only people that are really skilled at this are people who took the risks, probably got themselves into a lot of trouble, but were spiritually mature enough to figure out how to rectify it and then were able to move on and learn what to do and what not to do when using the occult in this way. I don't want to ever say that things like tarot cards, astrology, runes, Ouija boards, or even witchcraft are necessarily evil. Although, you know, certainly the Christian tradition, the Judeo-Christian tradition is very critical and more or less, absolutely condemns these things. But what people don't understand is the reason that these things were condemned. They weren't condemned because they were abominations, although in some cases they might be referred to as that. What was really more the issue was that these were very powerful spiritual methodologies. And if you did not have the skill to use them, you could wreak havoc on your life and the lives of those around you. It was just very dangerous and unnecessary. And so, you know, when I hear, you know, people using Ouija boards, you know, I don't go and say, you know, you need to stop because, you know, I'm an exorcist and I know these things. I mean, I don't do that. But I, you know, I do let them know, you know, if you're going to use it, learn the basics of the Western mystery tradition before you even pick one up. Just so that you can at least develop a certain, or I should say cultivate a certain maturity within yourself on a spiritual level so that you're ready to start working with these high-level things. Because if you don't know what you're doing, you're going to be like the two-year-old driving the car. You're going to crash. But that doesn't mean the car is evil, and it doesn't mean the car is a bad thing. A car can be extremely useful in the hands of a skilled, licensed driver. And a Ouija board, tarot cards, all that stuff is no different.
It's all discipline.
Yeah, it is.
It's like you said. It's like giving a kid a gun and he's not able to use it, let alone what to shoot and aim and harness it. You know, the energy or the know how. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, precisely. I mean, you can take a gun and you can go feed your family with it, or you can go take a gun and you can commit murder. It doesn't make the gun evil. It just means the gun is an extremely powerful tool that should only be used in an appropriate way by somebody who has the faculties of reason and intellection to use it appropriately. And so, you know, these are just very powerful spiritual things. But I think people see the spiritual world as sort of like a plaything. And it kind of alludes back to what you were saying there, Jason, you know, where, you know, you have this skeptical side. And I think a lot of people share a sort of skeptical side. And so I think a lot of this playing with the occult has more to do with wanting to prove to themselves that these things exist rather than really trying to, make something happen. So I find that in my work, when I deal with people that have had a history of working with the occult, more often than not, what they were looking for is some way of trying to see if this stuff was real. Because, you know, religion didn't cut it. You know, sometimes, just reading the Bible is kind of like old news for a lot of people. And the whole idea of working on a level of faith does not really sit well in a modern society like ours, where, you know, in modernity, you have a strong scientific drive. And then you have scientists like Stephen Hawking and that Neil Tyson guy. Neil deGrasse. You know, they almost are taking science to the level of being a refutation against religion. I mean, they are attacking religion using science as a weapon. And that's just an extremist form of just a different type of religiosity, as far as I'm concerned. But what it is really is we're living, you know, people are living in this time where science is very powerful, and it's never been more enlightening than it is now. And so to hear that there might be a spiritual world and that there might be ghosts and there might be paranormal experiences, I think people within that existing in that gray area between being completely critical and skeptical, and then that other side where they want to believe it, though. Because, who wants to die and become nothing? Nobody wants to die and become nothing. I mean, you know, you want to think that you have some type of eternal soul. It's a little bit more comforting than the idea of lights out forever. And so if you can prove it to yourself, even if you have to go through some kind of dark, shadowy way to get there, it's worth it to a lot of people. And then because they're so skeptical, sometimes they're like, they don't really believe it's going to do anything. So they go buy a Ouija board and they're like, yeah, I bet it's not going to work. I bet it doesn't do anything. And then something happens and then they realize, wow, this was something I really shouldn't have been messing with. Eventually I get stories like that. You know, I mean, a lot of our clients have similar stories to that.
You're into a situation, an investigation where your personal, spiritual, psychological, or physicality was in any kind of danger as a result of your intervention?
There's always a risk of that. I mean, we take great precaution, and this is part of why I really emphasize that, you know, paranormal investigation is not entertainment. It's not like that thing you do on the weekend as a club. It really should be done in a very serious way, and preferably should never really be done without the protection of the clergy. I mean, and I hate to say it, and I know I sound biased because, you know, I'm a bishop and what else am I going to say? But the reality is the church for 2,000 years has had the tools to safely deal with the spiritual world in this way. And to go it alone without that protection is extremely dangerous. And, what we utilize, and this is why I try to emphasize in our work that, you know, everyone participate in the life of the church. I don't force people to convert. Again, one of the beautiful things about the Holy Nicolaitan Catholic Church and its tradition is that we're not interested in converting people. We exist for people who find us and want to get something more out of their spirituality than what they're able to get in the conventional churches, because we are an esoteric church and we operate very differently than the mainstream. And that means that, you know, for us, we don't care if you call yourself Catholic. If you are a baptized Christian, you are welcome to participate in our sacramental life. That's part of our canons. That's not the canons of the Vatican. It's not the canons of the Eastern Orthodox churches, but it's definitely our canons. And so, this means that even though on my team I've got Episcopalians, I've got non-denominational Christians, I've got people that are, you know, from Protestant backgrounds, I only have really one Catholic on my team. other than myself. Well, my wife would be a second one, I guess, because she's actually part of my team. I invite them to come to Mass. So before we go on an investigation, I offer a Mass that week. I try to do it even the night before the investigation. The sacramental life of the church, by constantly renewing it and going to Mass weekly or even daily if possible, although that's very hard in a small church like us, like ours, because we just don't have the time to devote to the liturgy as often as we'd like to. As often as you can receive the Eucharist, as often as you can receive the sacraments of the church, these things protect you. On top of that, we have the sacramentals. So we have blessed objects, we have relics, we have holy water, exorcised salt, we have holy oils that can be utilized in certain ways that can even further protect the team and myself when we go into a potentially demonic infested area. And so there's always risk. So part of it is the sacramental life of the church that protects us. Part of it is a cultivating a very deep and profound prayer life. And another part is really cultivating one's own spirituality. And so I do a lot when I'm not dealing with investigations. I spend the rest of my ministry teaching people how to cultivate a direct experience with God so that they're not leaving it to faith. Faith is fine. Faith gets you through the door. But really, it's the direct experience that sends it home, particularly in our society today. So, you know, I teach my team how to do this, and it's a slow progression, and it doesn't happen as quickly as I'd like it to, but slowly there is awakening happening within each and every life that we touch, and that even further protects us. So I don't ever go into a location afraid. Do I get sick? It can happen and does. But I also know how to handle any type of attachment. So if something does latch on to me, I'm able to get rid of it very quickly, and it doesn't cause me too much of an issue.
Let me ask you, Brian, will you think about when you're entering like a hospital, a friend of ours, a family, a very close friend of our family, this person, their son had gotten a very tragic car accident last Wednesday, and he's at the hospital in the trauma unit, and part of me tells me, yes, I want to go and see him and you know, just be there and know that he's supported. But the other part of me is, being a psychic medium, is picking up all those things that can happen in that type of environment. So what's your thought on that, Brian?
Hospitals are very dark locations. I actually cannot stand being inside them myself. Part of that is because I am also very – the more you do this kind of work, the more sensitive you become to the spiritual world. It's just a natural consequence of the work. And so, you know, if you've never been a psychic, if you've never been a medium – and then all of a sudden you start doing this work on a regular basis, I guarantee you within a few years you're going to start being a psychic and a medium, because it's just a natural consequence of dealing with this energy on a regular basis. And so I've become very, very sensitive in the years of doing this work. And I do not feel comfortable in hospitals. And part of the reason for that is that it's a place where there is mass death and a lot of trauma. And those two things are recipes for spiritual disaster. I wish, you know, as a bishop, I feel kind of obligated to try to give everybody the feeling that, you know, when you die, it's going to be okay. Don't worry. Jesus is going to come and take care of it. You know, but it doesn't work that way. I'm sorry. It doesn't work that way. I'd be lying to you if I said it works that way. Does that mean that the church cannot help you? Of course not. The church has the tools to help you navigate into a successful afterlife. But if you're not utilizing those tools, then you're going to be really out of luck when you get there. And so most people die ill-prepared. Most people have not cultivated any spirituality of any kind. And then add to that, again, I'm going to get a little controversial here, but it's just, I'm not giving you, and I want to preface this, for your audience, because I know that there's a lot of people that are going to disagree with what I'm about to say. But I say this not because I'm a Catholic, and I'm saying this not because I want to push any particular point of view. This is strictly the evidence that we have received from our work. But it is true what the Church has taught. Life does begin at conception. And anywhere there is mass infant death, which hospitals are places where this happens, where there are abortions, where these things can occur, you are going to encounter high level of traumatic spiritual activity in that area, because those people are dying in an instinct of absolute terror, and that's all they've got. And remember, I mean, when in the case of a fetus, there isn't a developed brain there. You're not dealing with something that has ever developed intellection. So it's just pure, raw spiritual instinct, and it wreaks havoc, which is why if you ask any long-term serious paranormal investigator who does EVP collection, they're going to tell you that the majority of voices you get, particularly at hospitals, are the voices of children either crying or in states of terror. You get that all the time. And you're going to say, but wait a second, Bishop. I mean, they were fetuses. Why do they sound like children? And that has to do with a very complicated process of archetypal projection that is probably a lot more involved of a discussion than I can even get into in one radio show. But suffice it to say for now, there is a sort of manifestation, of progression, of expectation that gets attached to spiritual energy. And so it manifests in a way that is easiest for the perception of the living to experience. And so when there is a lot of child death, whether it be through abortion or some other disease or something else or accidents, the number one killer of children outside of abortion is car accidents, which is another type of trauma and can be very terrifying. If you die and you're not ready, and you die and you don't know you're dead, very frightening. Add to that our Western civilization to put people into morgues where they are autopsies are performed on them. Sometimes cremation takes place within just days after death. Buddhist culture, Tibetan Buddhists have said for thousands of years that, the spirit stays attached to the body for minimally 3 days after death, minimally. Preferably they wait. They don't even disturb a body in Buddhism until the body starts to show signs of release. And do you think we do that in Western culture? Of course not. We're too scientific for that. And so people are dying, and they're in absolute states of trauma, and then they get traumatized again by having to experience the traumas of autopsies and cremations and abortions and all sorts of horrible procedures, and they don't even have the mind to rationalize it. They just have the instinct. So it's like an animal in a state of terror, of fear, and they're not able to be rational. There's no rationalization. They just act out. And so hospitals, kind of a long way of getting back to your question, but hospitals are extremely active negative locations, particularly ones that have been abandoned. Because when there's no activity of the living, then spiritual energy increases. Most spiritual energy tends to stay away from living energy because they're not compatible vibrations. And then they actually make each other sick. So when a loved one dies, it's best to mourn them as efficiently as you can and then let them go, because you don't want to keep that energy around for their sake more so than for yours, because that can cause an attachment, and that can prevent them from being able to move on. And likewise, from the other side of the spectrum, we don't want people to die in a state where they feel that they're not ready to go. We want them to be fully comfortable with that idea, and that's just not true in Western society. People fear death, and that fear of death is keeping them locked into these cycles of spiritual trauma And that's why there's so much haunting and EVP. And I guarantee you, if you go home right now and turn on a digital recorder and start asking questions, within a few hours to a few days, you're going to start getting voices talking back to you. Anybody can try this at home. If you're a skeptic, go try it and prove it to yourself, because it will happen. And that's because everywhere's haunted. Everywhere is haunted. It's just we don't call it a haunting until the activity is so strong that we start that the average person can perceive it. But hospitals are places that's really strong.
We are
Sorry,
living among the dead. Are the people have
yes,
crossed
we
over?
Are.
We're intermingling with them. We just don't hear them and see them or feel them most of the time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, I mean, if you're not sensitive, then you kind of ignore it. But, you know, anybody can develop that sensitivity, although I wouldn't necessarily say that one should. I think it's like a vocation. I think people that are called to this type of work or people that are, even people like yourself, Sherry, who have natural mediumistic abilities, it's a calling. It's a gift. It's a gift from God. And, that's not something that's meant for everybody. So I really would caution anybody who wants to be a psychic medium who does not currently possess those natural abilities, I would not suggest that they go looking for ways to develop it because it's probably not meant for them, and it can probably cause them more harm than good.
I know that.
A lot of learning.
Yeah, it does.
Jason, we haven't heard from you. Hello?
Did we lose him?
I don't know.
Sorry.
Are you dead? I love it. Maybe we lost him.
He died. No.
we need you. That's amazing. Go ahead.
Talking a little bit and I'm curious, well, actually, we're almost out of time, but I wanted to ask, two things. First thing is I watched a video on the bird, and I have to say it certainly looks like a bird. It didn't look like a moth it's like wings extended. It looked like a bird. I was surprised. I expected to see just a little blurb fly by, but no, it looks like a bird. And then the other thing I wanted to ask was you were talking about how, you know, we're surrounded by the dead and everybody can do EVP sessions. And I've done many and I've captured a lot of real things from things calling my name really eerily to negative comments. So I kind of think something to that. But in terms of dying and death.
You're cutting in and out, Jason.
Oh, can you hear me now?
Yeah. How about you, Brian? Can you hear him?
Yeah, he was cutting out. He's been cutting out a little bit throughout the show. I've been able to catch most of his questions, but yeah, Jason, you've been cutting out a little bit. What was your question again?
I wonder why I'm cutting out. But my question is preparation for death, because you're right. Most people don't prepare. Everybody thinks everybody else is going to be the person that dies, and then you die, and it's unexpected. And I know with your beliefs and experience, but for the average person, what is the best way to prepare themselves for death? Can they join any religion? How does that all work? How can one be?
It's a good question. It's almost such a good question that it's a show in itself. But in the last minute here, I can give the best answer that I can. I would say that, yes, I mean, I think it is important to go and find a religion that is compatible with you, but not all religions are created equal. I'll say that, particularly as far as dealing with preparations for dying a good death. Some religions don't even have a formula for this. For example, Wicca is an example of a religion that does not really have a methodology for death preparation in a sense that would give them a skillful ability to manifest into an afterlife that would be beneficial. But I would say, you know, Christianity, obviously, I'm kind of biased with that, but I always say, you know, Christianity chose me. I didn't choose Christianity. In fact, I ran from it as much as I possibly could throughout a great deal of my life. And it just, you know, eventually, you know, it got its way with me. But Buddhism also would be a wonderful way, probably even better than Christianity as far as death preparation. But there's a lot of things that people can do. Without having more time, starting with a good religion that gives you the tools is a great way to start.
All right. And with that, we'll, sorry for cutting out. I don't know.
Sounds like you are cutting. Can you hear me? Can you hear me pretty well?
Yeah, I've heard you the whole time just fine.
Okay,
it's been no cutting out with you.
It's like you're in and out. Like I can hear bits and pieces of your words. So.
Well, normally I Skype in to Blog Talk, but for several months now, for some reason, Skype is no longer compatible with Blog Talk. So the only way for me to connect is using what they call Direct Connect.
Ooh,
not
really?
As good, yeah, over the internet, but it's not as good as Skype. So that's probably the reason for that. I really wish to fix the Skype feature for the host because that's the best way to connect with the best audio. But with that, I guess we got to wrap it up, Brian. I want to thank you so much for coming on the show tonight and teaching about the darker side of the universe. And I know it was educational for me, and I'm sure it was for Sherry too.
It's my pleasure. Anytime.
Thank you, Brian, for your time. We appreciate you. I know it's late. He's going at midnight. So, you know, we really appreciate your time and just sharing your knowledge and what you do. We just enjoyed it.
Well, thank you so much. It was a pleasure to be here. And like I said, I'll, you know, anytime you want to talk paranormal, I'll be more than happy to come back.
We will have you back. Thank you.
We definitely got to get
you
back. Real quick, if you want to contact you or learn more about this or check out your YouTube page again, how can they do that?
Best way to reach me would be through going to the esotericcatholic.org. That's esotericcatholic.org. Or they can go directly to nicolaian.org. That's nicholean.org. And that has links to most places where you can even request an investigation if you're in the Atlanta area and are having a paranormal event that you'd like us to come and look into. And if you're interested in seeing those videos, that's youtube.com/eyeoftheseer, all one word, and it will get you to my channel.
Yeah, everybody
should. Just take a little bit, and not to boast, but it's something to be mentioned, and I think that he deserves some recognition. Knock on wood and continue to have protection. But Brian has had a very high success rate in what he does, so I want to share that with our viewers and audience.
Thank you so much. We are very fortunate to be able to have resolved every case that has come to us to date. You know, I kind of get like cringe a little bit when I say that because I'm always afraid that you know, we're going to eventually have that case that we can't fix. But so far, we've been able to resolve every case to the client's satisfaction.
Awesome. Well,
okay.
On the show, and we'll talk to you. We'll have to get you on to a little bit more about the paranormal.
I look forward to it. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian.
Thanks, Brian.
Yay. Okay.
You.
Are you there? Hello?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Okay. Sorry.
I don't know.
Next week we're going to have him come back, Joe Panahu from Hawaiian Hauntings. We're going to have him back, and he's going to talk about his personal experience and please correct me, is it Bobby Mack or Bobby Mack? I don't know. But,
Bobby Mackey.
Anyway, I hear it's a very, very haunted location. He was personally there, and he's going to talk about his experience and how I believe he brought that entity or whatever home with him. So he's going to share that next week and come back on the show. Joe Panahu, who is with Hawaiian Hauntings.
Can you hear me now? Am I still skipping?
Yes, you're still skipping.
Oh, my God.
Okay. No, that's all right. Anyway, thank you to each and every listener for your support and your participation. We really value you, and it's all about sharing and being able to help with each other and bring the best guests we can at the show to be able to help everybody. So, anyway.
All righty. Well, if you can hear me, hope everybody has a great week, and we'll see everybody next Sunday, 8 p.m. West Coast time, for another episode of Paranormal Horizons, and hope everybody has a great week. Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody. Take care. Peace.